Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Do any of you guys happen to know how Jimmy C. saved that song?
No.
I don't know anything that Jimmy C. does except for Welcome to the Raw Reaction.
It's
also
like
really
here.
Muting you.
Yeah, well,
muted.
I'm running the studio tonight, so nobody will be muting me. Ladies and gentlemen,
right.
This is Raw Reaction for March 21st, 2016.
Yes, and we're going to be reviewing an episode of Raw that sounds about as good as Harry does right now. That was about as good as Harry sounds. Which is to say, shit.
Shouldn't these Raws that are so close to WrestleMania?
Now get the drugs, the drugs from my generation. I'll take the fall, the state, and across the nation. And it's a state, the cause, the fate, the fraud, the master with me. Come on, come on, come on, let's get it out.
Move to the music, play that fucking music. Move it to the music, yeah.
I hit the button right after I said that, and it decided it didn't want to work. All right, everybody. It is indeed March 21st, 2016. I'm Harry Broadhurst. I'm usually your host. However, as you can tell, I'm a little under the weather tonight, so I will be running the producial side of things since Jimmy Christopher isn't with us this evening. So I'll give you your actual host for the evening, the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero.
Hello, gentlemen and lady. I assume there's at least one of you, and thank you for listening. By the way, what's your name? Where do you live? What's your sign? How tall are you? And will you be able to fit in denim shorts a la AJ Lee? Okay, anyways, Raw happened. And I believe Rick was going to cover basically all of our sentiment with regard to a question that he had. Why don't you ask that question?
Okay, without the fear of being cut off by the Raw music, I was just going to say, shouldn't the Raws this close to WrestleMania, aren't they supposed to be like the best top-of-the-notch Raws as we are on what they like to call the road to WrestleMania, going into the biggest show of the year?
Yeah, I mean, the short answer is yes. The long answer is that they're supposed to be bonerific. I'm supposed to have a hard-on for WrestleMania already, and I'm supposed to be calling my doctor because it's lasting so fucking long. And right now, I believe that my penis has turned into ovaries because it's just gone all the way up inside myself. So uninterested in Raw as a whole. Sexual illusions aside, Raw sucks. it was just not that good. Of course, we're going to get into specifics, but realistically speaking, we talked a couple of weeks ago about WWE being able to turn the heat up come Mania season because, you know, that's what they do. And I argued that it's so crappy that we get average Raws, below average Raws on some occasions, like, you know, 80% of the year, but come WrestleMania, we get this great storytelling that proves they're capable of doing so. And then this year, we don't even have that. I don't even have an argument anymore.
You know what happened,
Tony?
The creative heard you mention about the fact that they usually turn it up this time of the year, and creative's like, well, fuck you, we just won't do that this year.
But I got a theory, though. Do you think maybe sometimes the WrestleMania that's coming, we're looking forward to WrestleMania so much that a lot of the bad episodes of Raw we just let kind of slide because we're just so already so amped and excited for WrestleMania. And this year, a lot of people just aren't feeling this year's WrestleMania, regardless of what they're giving us on Raw. Like, I know on the internet, tons of complaints about the main event at WrestleMania ever since Triple H won the Royal Rumble, and we kind of saw what direction they were going in. A lot of people still aren't on board with Roman Reigns versus Triple H.
Yeah, I mean, I think that plays a huge part in it, like, you know, a large part. But, you know, when it comes to that thing, people have always had this concept, including us, that at least there's going to be something on the show for us. No, we're not going to like Triple H versus Roman Reigns, but at least we're going to have this, or at least we're going to have that. And the issue has become the fact that even those matches that we may be looking forward to have been built in such a way that the interest is completely gone. And I'll use Harry for an example. I don't really know that he's going to answer this in a way that will help me, but, I mean, Jericho's his favorite wrestler. Jericho returns to the WWE. Jericho has a feud with AJ Styles. That is supposed to be the hugest thing ever. And although it's one of the better-built feuds, I want to know, how excited are you, Harry, after three full matches with these people, after a back-and-forth face-slash-heel, you know, gimmick, and after what we saw tonight, which is essentially, for the first time in a long time, an extension of SmackDown, not extension of Raw, which I'll say more about that as well. But, Harry, as a wrestling fan and as a Jericho fan, I mean, would you say your excitement is at an all-time high? And if it's not, why isn't it?
I think the best way to answer that question is for me, in regards to Jericho Styles 4 here, it's going to depend on the stipulation that they attach to this match. Because, obviously, it's not going to be a straight-up one-on-one contest. It doesn't make sense to do that after having done three previous one-on-one straight-up contests. Therefore, I think that they're going to have to add some kind of stipulation to this match. And with Hell in a Cell already on the card, with a no-holds-barred street fight already on the card, I kind of have to question what they'll be able to add to the show that will add to the show that won't take away from the other matches. So I'm nervous as to the direction they're going to go with it. Honestly, I worry that there could be better uses for both of them on the show, and referring to Jericho and Styles in that particular instance.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, I'm perfectly okay with storylines that involve matches beforehand. There's a great way to use two opponents who never touch each other and move forward to that final culmination of, you know, matches, and then, you know, it leads to that moment where they lock horns and it's amazing. But there's also something to be said about a continuing series of matches, and that's the route that they decided to go this time. With them doing that, I mean, it's not anything bad per se. It's just, but anyways, we're getting a little off track, aren't we? I mean, talking about Jericho already. Let's talk about Raw. We open up the show with Stephanie McMahon in the ring. She welcomes us to Raw, and we get our little opening segment, which is boring. Roman Reigns comes out to cut her off after she runs down the crowd, which, by the way, if you could go back to last week where Triple H did his whole, you know, promo of being better than the crowd and how they've worked for it and we expect things and we feel entitled, and we're supposed to relate that to Roman Reigns, I just saw no tie between Roman Reigns' character and me as a potentially broke, lazy, fat person, which is what Triple H was basically alluding to. So that didn't work for me. So this week we get Stephanie McMahon opening the show, and although she didn't do nearly as badly as Triple H's promo, she still didn't really say too much. Roman Reigns comes out, blocks a slap, which, I mean, that spoke volumes, shushes her, which would have worked better if Stephanie McMahon actually said nothing instead of saying, "Don't you shush me." and I guess the most telling point of this entire segment was the fact that the crowd, although it was a Philly crowd, was still booing the shit out of Reigns. So, I mean, with that being said, before we get to the second segment involving Roman Reigns, you know, do you think that his attitude change? Did you think that his attitude changed? The whole grabbing the mic and preventing slap and blocking the and shutting Stephanie McMahon up. Do you think that that was going to be enough while watching it to shut up the Philly crowd, Rick?
No way, man. No way. At this point, though, is it Pittsburgh next week that they're at?
I think so.
Brooklyn. I mean, at this point, they should just they just need to slide into it. Just stop trying. They're trying too hard, and it's the fans are not going to give you the reaction you want. You know, I wouldn't say it's so hard to say. You know, to make him heel because you really can't make Triple H face. Not going into this WrestleMania match. I think you're just going to have to deal with it. You put yourself in this corner. You made the bed. Now you're going to have to lay in it. You're going to have to go into this match with these mixed reactions, which I don't even think you're going to be that mixed. I think it's just going to be a lot of boos coming the way of Roman Reigns. And there's really not much you could do to prevent it until this title match is over with. And then, you know, regardless of the outcome, I think it's time to pull the trigger and turn Roman Reigns heel.
I don't even think that would work. But okay, well, later on in the show, we got Stephanie McMahon deciding that she's going to leave. She's heading out. She asks Kevin Owens to turn the lights off before he leaves. It's, you know, a lot to ask for someone, I think, especially for an arena. She goes to the backstage area. Triple H opens the car door, lets her in, and then goes in himself. We then zoom in to a large garage door going up so slow. Okay, not like comically slow, but slow enough to where you're asking yourself, okay, we get it. What's next? Rain starts from, you know, from toe all the way up to head. He waits until the door opens completely, like we're doing a filming a college movie, a little indie film. Then he walks to the car door and he opens it, pulls out Triple H. Stephanie McMahon screams as if, I don't know, Triple H is getting raped? I don't know. And then we do a little mini beatdown scene until Triple H goes back into the car and, you know, requests that the driver drive away. Now, this segment was weird, and that's one of the best ways that I could explain it, due to more so the Triple H character not fulfilling what I thought the Triple H character was. But before I expand upon that, I just wanted to know what you guys thought. We all agree that it was a bad segment. So what specifically about it did you think didn't work?
The thing is, this is like one of those things where, okay, you got to really suspend your belief of, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for?
Suspend your disbelief.
Yes, that's what I was trying to say. Thank you, Harry. This is like, first of all, why wouldn't he lock the door when he sees Roman Reigns slowly walking to get him out? Well, and then before I even get there, Roman Reigns is supposed to be pissed off, aggravated, you know, just had enough. He should be storming this door, ready to beat Triple H's ass, not like standing there in his Superman pose while the door is going up. Then walking to the car, pulling Triple H out. The car should have been locked. The driver could have ran over Roman Reigns and took off out of there if they really wanted to get out of there. It was almost too fabricated and unbelievable to make it a good segment. Now, that being said, though, if it's just for entertainment purposes, I mean, I did kind of like watching Roman Reigns beat on him a little bit. I mean, I could see they're trying, beforehand, blocking the slap and all that. They're trying to make Roman Reigns the badass that he should have always been, instead of the joke cracker and just instead of shrugging everything off and trying to play everything cool as a cucumber. This is what they should have always kept this character as, just this silent badass killer. But it's a little too late. Too little, too late, in my view.
The situation at hand becomes the fact that the character is damaged beyond the point of return for this particular match. And even though you're going to have a mixture of fans who are of the of the more savvy variety as well as your more traditional fans in the building there. I think that there's a strong possibility that the savvy variety fans, your traditional WrestleMania crowd, are going to outnumber your traditional fans, and Reigns is going to get the exact kind of reactions that he's been getting when he's been shown in Philadelphia or when he was mentioned in Chicago last week.
Right. You know, it's an inconsistency with writing, but it's also an inconsistency with character development, with the entire notion of what Triple H is. The obvious logical issues that you have, like, I made a joke in the Raw report that Triple H and Stephanie McMahon must have been making out or getting it on because they were paying no attention to what was in front of them. You know, the driver could have at any given point said, hey, there's a guy standing right there, and I think it's the same one that beat you up last week, so you might want to do something, you know? Like, what the hell, right? And then, yeah, the idea that seeing him beat up Triple H and all that, that's cool and whatnot, and it's kind of what Reigns needed, but again, it is too late. It's far too late, and it's not nearly as impactful as the beating that Roman Reigns took. The blood alone was more, you know, just it was dramatic. It made more sense. It felt real. But what we saw tonight, and if I want to paraphrase Larry Sanka's review of Raw tonight, what we saw was a man attacking a guy who was trying to protect his wife and speed out of there. That's what we saw. So basically, we saw a heel attack a face who was trying to protect his wife. Now, we can say it was Triple H and Stephanie, so it's not that big of a deal. It's way different, blah, blah, blah. But again, even if we do that, I'm seeing some inconsistency. Do you think Stephanie McMahon would scream her heart out if Roman Reigns attacked Triple H in the ring? If there was no weapons involved, if there was just him, you know, attacking him. When did this become, oh, this isn't wrestling. This is like, oh, he's beating his ass. Help me, help me. Stephanie, that's not her. She's the same lady that slapped Dolph Ziggler, that almost slapped Roman Reigns, and now you're screaming bloody murder because he grabbed your husband's arm? Like, where is the consistency in any of these characters that we've known to basically dislike? I can't say known to love. So the entire segment didn't work for me. And I get what they're trying to do continuously, but like Harry said, and like Rick, said better, it's too little too late. It's just not redeemable. And my biggest issue with all of this is that it's not redeemable because of them. Any one of us three can create a week-long storyline. Give us two shows, and we can make Roman Reigns great again. You know, and that's not a Donald Trump slogan. That's real. But these people, and I don't even know their names, but this room full of pundits simply cannot write well, and it's becoming very, very obvious in a season in which your fans are the most forgiving.
All right, I'm gonna go ahead and take this opportunity to bring JD in. JD, we're kind of talking about the Roman Reigns Triple H backstage segment right now. You want to give your thoughts on that?
Yeah, sure, Harry. Thanks a lot, Howard, and hope you're feeling better. You know, it was kind of a hokey segment tonight. I mean, last week it was pretty good. Tonight, Howard, they kind of took two steps back on that old saying, like you go two steps ahead, two steps back. And I think they did that tonight. They're going to have to really fix that next week going into the go-home show for Mania in Brooklyn. If they don't, Howard, they're going to be in deep, deep trouble. And the build-up for this has just absolutely been horrendous the last few weeks. It really has. They've had like one or two matches that are good. Tonight, you only had one good match, which was the opener. The rest was like a 2.5-hour waste of shit. No pun intended. It really, really was.
I mean, there were a few things here and there throughout the course of the show that I enjoyed, but generally speaking, this was not a 2 weeks before WrestleMania episode of Raw.
Exactly. I agree with you. I agree 100% with you.
All right. Anything else you specifically wanted to touch on, JD?
Real quick, like I said, just a congrats to Stan Hansen, the madman from Booger, Texas, the latest Hall of Famer. And that's basically it. Nothing else. And I just want to listen in for a while if it's okay.
All right, that's fine. Thanks for calling in, JD.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you next week for my predictions.
All right, yeah. In case you guys don't remember, what we're going to be doing next week is we're going to entirely ignore the go-home episode of Monday Night Raw. And the Raw Reaction will be a dedicated preview specifically towards WrestleMania 32. We'll get all of our predictions. Hopefully Jimmy C will be back. Hopefully I'll feel better. and we'll have everybody's predictions as we'll run down top to bottom the what looks like it's going to be at least 11 and possibly 12 matches that make up the WrestleMania 32 card.
So y'all call for that episode. Trying to make it real.
I'm still trying to figure out which pun he wasn't trying to intend. So, Raw, we're going to basically shift gears because I think if we talk about Reigns a little bit more, it's going to annoy us. I'll be bringing him up again throughout the show, but we're going to go over to Harry's little spot in the spot. Son, a little Harry's hit. Just go. I'm getting tongue-tied here.
You sound like I feel, Tony. All right, so speaking of one step forward, two steps back, the hit tonight is going to be about Big E and Rusev. And I don't really have an issue with the match itself. I don't have an issue with the fact that Big E and Kofi were able to sneak out a victory for Big E by pinning Rusev with the big ending. The specific thing that I wanted to talk about was the promo beforehand that the New Day did. And if this is any indication of what's going to happen when they decide to fully turn the New Day babyfaces, I think we're better off leaving them as heels. Because for as cutting edge and as vibrant as their act feels like when it was in its own developing stages, when it was able to progress and develop on its own, it kind of feels like they're neutering the New Day here by having them go to this hackneyed, corny shtick that they've been doing the last couple of weeks here. I will openly admit there were a couple lines that did make me chuckle from Big E during the course of that promo, and one specific line from Xavier Woods that made me chuckle as well. But when your entire promo has a runtime of about 5 to 6 minutes and you get off two good lines during the course of its entirety, something's wrong, especially compared to the New Day's traditional hit-and-miss ratio. Tony, I ask you this question as a result of the hit. Do you think that it's entirely possible that turning them babyface is going to neuter the New Day's momentum?
I don't think it's the turn that's going to neuter them as much as it's the somewhat formulaic promo system that they're doing right now. Now, here's the thing that I've noticed about them, and I said this months ago, that they're not as funny as they think they are. And that comes off really badly when you're watching a promo. If you watch someone that's relatively funny and natural, then it comes off as such. But what you saw tonight and what you see numerous times with them is that it's coming off somewhat forced. The reason why is because they spend too much time on it. They should be pissed the fuck off right now. They're not. The good lines that they got, yeah, they were great, you know, but it took a long time to get there. And all it is that they're taking too much time trying to get over things, such as the bootios, such as the constant whoo in shame thing, you know. Those things are they're crowd interaction things. It's what they're told to do. Somehow get the crowd to react to you so that they could follow suit. It's so that they can constantly be a part of the show. That's their job. What troubles me is that it seems really forced. You'll notice a lot of pop culture references that they do, a lot of asides, a lot of minor jokes that not everyone will get. Those are the best parts of the New Day because not everyone should get it. But the attempt to get them to repeat themselves and by proxy the crowd do so as well is really coming off as forced and it's going to piss certain people off. As far as the turn, I think the turn was going to come naturally, and I'm okay with it because the hope is that they don't change themselves, and I haven't seen a change really. They're still doing what they're supposed to be doing, you know, playing the trombone when it's annoying, playing the numbers game. They didn't go full-fledged face, you know. So I'm not too worried about the turn as much as I'm worried about the somewhat staleness that the act is going to, if it hasn't already, procure. Moreover, I'm worried about the match coming up at WrestleMania. I don't think anybody's interested. I mean, they've already beaten the team more than once. And then tonight, Big E beat Rusev, you know? And it's just like, I mean, from a booking standpoint, is anyone interested in this match? I don't think so.
You know what worries me about this is I feel like they're going to have to put the tag titles on the League of Nations at WrestleMania.
You know what got? You know what I was aggravated about in that promo though? I felt like the League of Nations, who are on the outside of the ring, kind of no-sold the promo in a sense, because when they're giving off all those lines and making fun of them, I thought the members of the league should have looked pissed off, but they just, like, laughed it off, like, haha, y'all are a bunch of clowns, y'all are stupid, just, like, laughed it off. It's like, I would have rather them have some kind of mean scowl on their face, just showing that, you know, that they're upset at what the news just said about them. That pissed them off, and now they're going to get in the ring and going to be an intense battle, but no, they just laughed and shrugged everything off like the New Day's a joke.
No, you know what it reminded me of? You know what it reminded me of? Do you remember the, obviously I got to remember who I'm talking here. Tony, you remember the Bella's reactions to AJ's pipe bomb promo?
Yeah, they were constantly shouting loser and putting it out of their forehead and talking over the promo. It is along the same vein of it.
That's what it reminded me of, and in all the worst ways possible.
Right. I mean, you saw them, you know, putting Barrett down, and Barrett basically throwing his hands in the air and cheering. Rusev gave himself a bath. you know, like they did no sell the shit talking, and I think what's worse is that New Day bounced back and forth from being funny to being, you know, serious to being funny. It was like 80% serious, 20% funny. And I'm sorry, the other way around, 80% funny, 20% serious. And the issue with that is the same issue that I have with every John Cena promo. What are we supposed to be engaging in? Are we supposed to be laughing, or are we supposed to be like, oh, shit, they're serious right now? Because if you recall the promo after their tag team match where they gave respect to the other two teams, which I, you know, I call back to a lot because I hated that segment immediately after, they were serious. They literally said, if we could be serious for a minute, thank you, Lance Storm, we have something to say, and it's really important. And you believed them, and you held on to that, and you said they're not just a joke act. They're not just kidding around. They're real, you know, and I don't get why they didn't do something like that tonight.
Well, unfortunately, that kind of aggression wouldn't necessarily come off for the New Day, because I don't think most of the universe views them in that tone. I think they honestly consider the New Day to be kind of a parody gimmick.
Well, I think even parody gimmicks can have some power to them.
Well, I was just going to say, it's going to take that kind of a response to an ass-whooping that they take down the road for the fans to get behind them as serious ass kickers, in addition to being an entertaining, in addition to bringing the entertainment value that they bring.
It's going to be a 4-on-3 match at Mania. Is that?
I believe it's 4-on-3, and it's for the tag titles.
Yeah, from what I've seen, it is. So if we can highlight some positivity going on tonight, we had an amazing opening contest. Okay, we had Kevin Owens versus Mr. Styles, and they went balls out. They went crazy. It's kind of depressing only in the aspect of the fact that this probably could have been a main event of any given pay-per-view and we got it on Raw. But from the standpoint of getting awesome wrestling on a Monday night, this was perfect. It went through two commercial breaks. It had action from beginning to end. It had multiple near falls. It had new moves that we either haven't seen in a long time or haven't seen from these guys in terms of the WWE. It had intrigue. It had action. It was everything that you wanted from a match, and the people involved played their roles exactly how they were supposed to. There's nothing that I could say bad about this match. The only time I would is if in the event we were to say that the ending was somewhat cliche, which I agree, but I was okay with that, even because of the fact that the match was so awesome.
Just real quick here, I want to give a quick comment about the match itself here. In regards to the finish to this match being kind of cliche, given the fact that Owens couldn't afford a loss with his Intercontinental title match coming up at Mania, even though we still didn't have it decided as to who he was facing, and obviously Styles is in the middle of a program with Jericho, and it was a similar finish to this on SmackDown, I really don't have an issue with this particular finish.
Yeah, I mean, even I'm not mad about it. I think the only thing that is troublesome for me is the fact that we saw it a few days ago. And that's really it. It just seemed like a repetition. You know how we usually talk about how Raw does something and you see a rematch or something similar on SmackDown? Well, for whatever reason, this week, on 3 to 4 different occasions, we saw a retreat of what happened on SmackDown over on Raw. So, but again, I was okay with it. I think that I forgive it, mainly because the match was awesome, and also because, like you said, there's really not a good way for either one of them to lose. So, yeah, the match was stellar, and that was something that I think that they needed to be applauded for. Kevin Owens doing as Kevin Owens does. He had some mic time to say that he was the best, and a few people disagreed with him, namely Dolph Ziggler, The Miz, and Sami Zayn, who all came out and tried to plead their case about getting a shot at the title. Kevin Owens very, and I say cleverly, mainly because this felt so different from the rest of the show. It wasn't something where you're like, oh, shit, he got me. But it was just done so easily, so naturally, if you will. You know what? As a champion, we're going to have a triple threat match tonight, and whoever wins is getting a shot at the title. Now, my immediate thought was, okay, this is cool. We're going to get the Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens match. That's something that I think everyone's clamoring for. They're finally doing it, and they're doing it in a way that isn't super difficult. It's a triple threat. All right, cool. Owens asked for permission, which I thought was weird that they added that segment because they don't take their time to do stuff like that. You know, a little exposition, a little throwaway segment that makes sure we see him ask Seth. Then when he announced the competitors, I laughed because it was beautiful. That was a great little moment that made me think Kevin Owens wrote it himself, honestly. Giving the introduction to Stardust and Ryder and Sin Cara, and giving the definition, you know, the introduction to each one of those people could have easily fit Miz, Dolph, and Sami Zayn. And I love that little aspect of it. I thought that was awesome as well. So it's really, I enjoyed the entire, you know, swerve, if you will. I really did. Even though I was disappointed that by that point, I knew we weren't going to get Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens. Then they announce that it's a ladder match and all 7 men are going to be involved. And although I'm sure it's going to be energetic and high impact, I want to ask you guys, as wrestling fans, are we disappointed because it's a multi-man match, or are we disappointed because we're not getting Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn?
I'm disappointed that it's a multi-man match that's involving 3 participants that really have no business being in this match to begin with. Look, if you want to do a ladder match for the IC title, I suppose you want to get a couple extra bodies in there in order to pad out the match here. But the way that everything has been building up for the last couple weeks in regards to the IC title, a standard fatal 4-way to Owens, Zayn, Ziggler, and Miz would have been good enough for me. Neville would have had Ziggler's spot before he blew out his ankle last week, but other than that, you had a viable reason for the 4 of them to meet in an actual 4-way match where you didn't need the ladder stipulation because there's a pay-per-view dedicated to ladder matches. There's a pair of pay-per-views actually dedicated to ladder matches later on in the year. So you don't need the ladder stipulation. You could have just went with doing Miz, Owens, Ziggler, and Zayn in a 4-way match and then leave Stardust, Ryder, and Sin Cara for the Andre Battle Royal. And I think in Sin Cara's case, he has another plan for WrestleMania as well, and I'll talk more about that next week when we do our predictions.
And then when we're watching that WrestleMania match, just imagine all the participants on the ground and Zack Ryder's climbing up the ladder. Do we really think he's about to grab the Intercontinental Championship? We got 3 guys in that match that we know is not have a chance to win. But I'll answer your question though about I think we're more upset or frustrated that we're not getting the one-on-one Zayn versus Owens match. And I was talking about this with Harry before the show started, but we got a U.S. title match. I don't know if it was made official or not, but Ryback and Kalisto. And those two, I mean, they might be able to put on a good match, but there's no, like, real story in there or any real build. You could have easily took that U.S. title match and throw in all those random guys and make that the ladder match and give us the match that has history behind it, the match that has a very good story to tell, the match that a lot of people are interested in, Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn for the Intercontinental title at WrestleMania, one-on-one. It would have been perfect. And they could have still had their multi-man ladder match for the U.S. title, and nobody, I don't think anybody would have complained about that.
Yep, I don't think anybody would have been mad either. And you know, the thing, I'm not 100% upset about the multi-man match. I do not know why Ryder would be involved. And I don't think that Miz Dolph or, I don't think that Miz or Dolph have a right to the title either, basically. So, just in how they've been booked recently, and Miz for years. So, I don't know. It just, the whole match itself, it really feels like let's throw as many people as we can out there. And that just kind of, just doesn't really, if you're watching WrestleMania, you're watching it for the conclusion of a great story. So, Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn, I understand why they may not want to throw that out there. They didn't really have enough time to build it up. And, it wasn't, you know, they could do so much more with so much more time. So I'm not too upset that they're not doing that match. But the whole multi-man thing also doesn't work out for me.
And, you know, we talk a lot about the what's been going on lately with the injuries in the locker room. It just seems kind of irresponsible to throw all these guys in a ladder match when half your roster is depleted due to injury anyway.
Well, and I think another thing about that, too, is in regards to this being a ladder match, is, yeah, you have that spectacle out there, but at the same time, you are running that gigantic injury risk for a couple of these guys because you know people like Ryder and people like Ziggler are going to take some relatively stupid bumps in regards to their own personal well-being in order to make sure that they have the opportunity to shine in this match, because this is the biggest match Zack Ryder has had probably since he was the United States champion. This is going to be Ziggler's biggest match at a WrestleMania since he was in the six-person tag with Snooki. This is probably Ziggler's biggest match since his tag title opportunity against Team Hell No when he was teaming with Big E. So you know that they're going to take this opportunity to try to make names for themselves, probably at the expense of their own well-being. At this particular time here, while we're in the process of talking this, I'm going to go ahead and bring John in and get his thoughts here. John, what are your thoughts on the fact that they're going with the ladder match for the IC title here?
Well, I do think Zack Ryder seeing Carr and Stardust in the Intercontinental title ladder match is way over. You know, I mean, do you really think we could have seen these guys in the Andre and the Giant Battle Royal? I mean, yeah, they could have gotten the chance to go to the Andre and the Giant Battle Royal, but I just don't know.
All right, so what's on your mind, John?
Well, we know now that Undertaker and Shane McMahon held a cell with the stipulations on the line, and I voted for Shane McMahon in your show a few weeks ago, but now I'm kind of torn, seeing as now Vince McMahon says that if Undertaker loses, that'd be his last WrestleMania. Well, you know what? I think now my gut tells me, a part of me says Shane wants to win, but then another says, you know what? Let's get Taker to win, too.
Here's my thought process about that, and since it's not on our format, I guess this is as good a time as any to talk about this segment. The thing that I have here is that if, and by the way, I don't know if it's just me, but I'm picking up a bad echo on your phone, John, just a heads up. But the thing about this match to me is the fact that if Shane wins, Shane gets control of the WWE and Raw, and Shane would have the ability to overturn the decisions that are made by the previous by the previous controllers of the company as well. Therefore, if Shane wins, Shane can just overturn Vince's ban on Undertaker from wrestling at WrestleMania again there, and the entire stipulation that Vince made tonight would be rendered moot.
Yeah, and the thing is, Tony, I mean, Harry, that the thing is, Harry, you know, Shane has worked so hard to return back into WWE, and, you know, when Shane came back, we were like, okay, are we going to have Shane versus Vince at WrestleMania? All right, cool. With ownership on the line, cool. But, you know, when we got Shane versus Undertaker inside Hell in a Cell, I was like, oh, no, this is going to be the worst nightmare for Shane McMahon. And it looks like The Undertaker may have to do his bidding to Vince McMahon. Who knows? It's all just going to happen, I guess, and we're all just going to have to wait and see going into WrestleMania. So, Tony, Harry, I'll talk to you guys next week to make my WrestleMania predictions. I hope I get ready for them. And you guys have a great night.
All right. Thanks for calling in, John. Appreciate it. Yeah, like John said, we will be doing full WrestleMania predictions next week. The only thing that I wanted to say here real quick about this, and then I'll let you guys chime in on that whole segment as well, is do you guys think this really changes anything? Because as I just said, Shane can just overturn the decisions that are made if he's able to take over control here. Doesn't that kind of render this whole thing with Vince moot anyways if Shane wins? And what's to stop Taker from laying down for Shane, much like I predicted anyways?
Yeah. And you call me a toe stepper. I had said that same point to you, Harry. Yep. That's what I think. Shane McMahon, I mean, if he wins this match, he's going to be in charge, so it really doesn't matter what stipulations Vince puts out there.
That was payback for all those weeks of you stepping on my toes, Holmes. Tony?
Yeah, this was stupid. There's really no other way to say it. Let's recap the segment as an entire in its entirety. Vince McMahon comes out to, I want to say, very little response. Not nearly as much as he expected. That could be seen.
That Philadelphia crowd either stopped or their microphones were turned way down.
No, I just think that they lost energy throughout the show. I think that the show started off hot and got consistently bad. But it got to the point where he literally goaded the crowd. Like, he threw his hands up in the air and basically said, cheer for me. And that, it's really telling how Vince McMahon, at least character-wise, is in terms of, you know, ego and what he expects from the crowd. Like, he expects them to react to him the same way that they've done in the past. And that's just not going to happen anymore because he's old or because he's not a mainstay on the show, not nearly anymore. And the things he says aren't very relatable, with, you know, either hate or like. Like, it's apathy. It's complete apathy. So this is supposed to be a huge announcement. It's been advertised throughout the entire show. He says the announcement, and again, the crowd doesn't do anything. It's not that big of a deal to them. They're just like, okay. And I think because a lot of people thought exactly what you guys are saying. Well, that doesn't make any sense. So Taker loses, and he will no longer wrestle at WrestleMania, but that means Shane wins, which means Shane controls Raw, which means he's got an entire out. He's got a huge out. Well, I run this shit now. The Undertaker can wrestle WrestleMania, and that's a whole year from now. Who's to say that they're even going to, you know, it's just a bad plan all the way around, which will lead me to my do. But if you'll excuse me for
Hold
just
on.
One second, Harry.
Hold on. I got you, Tony. You ready? There you go. Tony.
Yes?
I opened my Mountain Dew bottle for you.
Oh, nice. All right. Well, actually,
it doesn't
translate
well over the radio.
I see. I was waiting. I missed it, I guess. The do. I'm sorry. Okay, I got sidetracked. The entirety of the do, I think I wrote in the format, what the hell did I write? Missing a chapter. This goes perfectly in line with The Undertaker versus Shane, because I want to talk about how season 4 of Breaking Bad is lauded as one of the best seasons of any television show ever created by man or woman, okay? Breaking Bad, the entire show, is fucking beautiful. It is one of the best pieces of storytelling out there, written or otherwise. It is awesome. It's great. I cannot say enough good things about it. Now, I'm about to compare it to the WWE, and to most Breaking Bad fans, that would be an insult, and I understand that. But I don't want you to take that against – I don't want you to put that against me. It's not about quality so much as what I'm – the point that I'm trying to make. In watching season 4, I watched it on Netflix the first time I saw it, and I was watching it to kind of catch up with everyone else because by that point they were already talking about the second half of season 5 and how I need to catch up and blah, blah, blah. I had just met Gus Fring and fell in love with the character. So I'm watching, and – In Netflix, you know, it shows you where you're at on an episode and whatnot. Well, for some reason, I don't remember for sure which episode it was, but I went from one, let's just say it was episode 4, and I went directly to episode 6. I skipped episode 5, not on purpose. It just, that's how it worked. I pressed play or I pressed the wrong episode. You know, whatever happened, and I missed that episode. So I was watching episode 6, you know, as an example, for roughly 20 to 30 minutes, and I was really confused. Because I got it, the stage was set, I have 4 seasons before that helped me out, and I could have pieced together certain things, but there was something integral missing, and it was just one episode, 45 to 50 minutes, but it was necessary to have in order for me to accept the complete story. Without that episode, I could have really pieced it together, I could have understood, but it wouldn't have been as impactful, I wouldn't have been as invested, and I wouldn't have been a part of the crowd that followed the story from beginning to end. Now, I say all this because I want to compare it to The Undertaker versus Shane McMahon, where we had, at the very beginning, a very compelling story that was very Shakespearean, if you will, even as Jericho called it, Game of Thrones-like, where the prodigal son returns to take back what he feels is rightfully his, what he feels his father is destroying. That's good stuff. And it's also easy to write. And then we have the father who hires his gunslinger to, you know, rid the world of his former son because he's no longer interested in giving him his inheritance or what he feels is still his. So we have this storyline. And then a week passes by and nothing significant happens. And then another week passes by and, again, nothing significant happens. They're selling it as if this is the biggest storyline to ever happen. Vince McMahon literally said Shane McMahon was the most formidable opponent that The Undertaker would ever face at WrestleMania. What the fuck? So what I'm saying all of this for is that somewhere along the line, we missed an episode, okay? The problem is we're not the ones that fucked up here. We're not the ones that accidentally clicked on episode 6. The writers and the WWE that were unable to bridge one side of a story to another because they're just crappy writers, apparently. That's really the only thing that I can grasp, that they willingly cut out the whole, oh, Shane McMahon has so many secrets and things to hold up above Vince's head. That no longer exists. Now it's about Shane McMahon's inheritance, which I don't think he ever was interested in. That's not what he wanted. He never said anything about money. In fact, I remember him saying, I made my own money. I have my own legacy. I came back so that I can restore what you're destroying. So where did that come from? What are we, you know, basically there's a huge disconnect here. And that's what I wanted to pinpoint. That's what I wanted to talk about. With the inability of the WWE writers to simply go from A to D without, they completely miss the B and the C all the time. And this is just one of the biggest and glaring examples heading into WrestleMania of a storyline that, I mean, could have and should have been extremely awesome and is now just like I still don't get it. Like, what did I miss? What was supposed to happen that we didn't get to see?
What's in the lockbox?
I feel like I feel like bringing Shane back and having him go after Vince was the wrong way to go here. I think it would have made more sense if he would have been involved with Triple H upon his return. And I don't know if the reason that him and Triple H are being separate is because there are some legitimate hard feelings there or if they're saving it for a later date. But at the same time, Vince is entertaining of a clusterfuck as Shane and Taker at WrestleMania is going to be, because let's be honest here. The McMahon name is built in spectacle, and that match is going to be a total one. That being said, I think that there's going to be more of an emotional connect for your average wrestling fan for Shane if he would be feuding with Triple H, because of the fact that Shane was the one who was set to become the guy that ran the company when he was younger, and then he left and went and did his own thing for a while, and Stephanie assumed control there, and that seemed to be the way that they were playing it when Shane returned a couple of weeks ago. Rick?
Yeah, I feel like there's still some unanswered questions. I know the whole thing with The Undertaker, why he agreed to this match, I just accepted the fact that, you know, Undertaker is The Undertaker, and he really doesn't care. You know, you just put him in Hell in a Cell, and he's like a caged animal, and he's just going to attack. But, I mean, I accepted that as good enough, I guess, but really it's not good enough because I should want better storytelling, because there's got to be a reason for Undertaker to agree to this. I mean, we've already seen him put his hands on Vince as if to say, you can't control me. I do my own thing. I'm my own man. Yet he's perfectly okay with being booked into this match for no apparent reason. Undertaker's always, I mean, he seems like he's a good guy, really. He's not an evil, I don't know, maybe he is evil. It's hard to tell. I mean, that's how bad the storytelling has gotten, that you can't tell who's good, who's bad, what their motivations are anymore. And it seems like they could have had more explanations as to why Undertaker is doing this, what's in the lockbox, you know, what is he holding over Vince's head. And I agree with Tony. It's like we missed a little bit here. But at the same time, I'm not completely out of it, because I'm really excited to see how this Hell in a Cell match is going to go. And I think the little clip of Shane training actually has – Shane looks pretty good. And I know Undertaker, he's a professional. He can make anyone look really good in a match against him. So I think the match is going to be okay. I just would prefer a better storytelling.
You know what I think, though, Rick, and it kind of goes back to what I just said a few moments ago here. The thing about Shane and Taker is we're going to watch Shane and Taker and enjoy it for the spectacle that it is, not the story that was told going into it. Whatever they decide to do with the story coming out of WrestleMania is their prerogative, but once that bell rings and the match is started, none of us are going to care what the story going into the match is going to be. We're going to care about what is Shane going to do in order to reestablish his legacy as being that guy that when he shows up to wrestle a match on pay-per-view, you can expect him to take several really fucking stupid bumps.
Yeah.
I'm interested in seeing it. Like I said, he looked good in those clips, man. I've seen him doing the arm breaker and training with some of the Gracies, doing some kind of mixed martial arts type of stuff, which I know Undertaker's always been a fan of.
I think that's a mistake, though. I think showing Shane training in MMA is a mistake, because given just the size disparity between the two, it makes no sense that Shane would be able to hang with Taker in regards to a striking game.
There's more than a striking going on, because Shane was doing a lot of grapple holds and arm bars and stuff like that.
Okay, but we've pretty much established that Taker is the guy when it comes to the ground game in the WWE right now, as far as once he gets people down onto the mat and is able to wear them down there. And I don't think that it would make sense for Shane to want to go to the ground with Taker, because just as quickly as he tries to go to the ground with Taker, Taker could catch him in Hell's Gate, and it would theoretically be over then and there.
Yeah, but Shane McMahon is the most formidable opponent that The Undertaker has ever had at WrestleMania, so there's that.
Well, there's also the fact that as each year passes, Undertaker is older, slower, and really not in his prime, not as good as he once was. I really don't think that the difference between the two is that far off. I mean, Undertaker's, I think it's pretty much been accepted. He's not the same Taker that he used to be. It's not that far out of the realm of possibility for Shane to win this match.
Yeah.
I'm interested. There's going to be, like Harry was saying, there's going to be spectacle involved. And maybe a few run-ins. It's going to be some crazy shenanigans going down. I'm not trying to suggest that Shane's going to defeat The Undertaker in a Hell in a Cell cleanly 1-3, but I am saying he's those clips that they showed of him training, and I know he can edit that and get some of the better clips, but just Shane looks like he's in top-notch condition, and I think I don't think he'll look bad against The Undertaker is what I'm trying to say. I think he actually is going to be all right.
All right. So do you think that those videos that they had added anything tonight to the match with the particular legends and other people, including John Cena, speaking about the match coming up?
Pay attention to those videos. I mean, I saw the clips of Shane training. As far as, like, the interviews of what the other wrestlers had to say about the match, I mean, I'll be honest, I didn't have my whole focus on that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I'm gonna take this opportunity to kind of lead Rick right into his Cajun corner here, in that I feel like if you're going to use legends and people who are established as being part of the lore of the WWE, you kind of want to limit their involvement to one storyline per show, and it kind of stepped on the toes of another storyline that they've been running over the course of the last couple weeks.
And what Aaron's referring to is Dean Ambrose's, what I call the Hardcore Legends Tour. Last week, we had a pretty good backstage segment between Mick Foley and Dean Ambrose, one that I really enjoyed. It started off with Mick pretty much trying to convince Dean that he's making a mistake wrestling Brock, that, you know, this is not really in his best interest, to which Dean Ambrose replied, you know, whenever you were on the top of that Hell in a Cell with Undertaker and he threw you off, you know, why'd you do that? Why'd you get involved in that match? And Mick Foley said, well, I was Mick Foley. That's what I did. Dean Ambrose replied, I'm Dean Ambrose. This is what I do. And it was a really good segment to where Mick pretty much referred to Dean Ambrose's past in CZW, where he said, if you're going to do this match with Brock Lesnar, you need to dig deep down way back in the past, which, for those who doesn't know, you should really Google search John Moxley, CZW, because Dean Ambrose was a pretty hardcore badass. I mean, he's been involved in these hardcore street fight matches, the likes that you would imagine people like Mick Foley and Terry Funk have been in. And last week, after Mick Foley pretty much gave his agreement with Dean Ambrose, he handed him a special present, and it was the wrapped up barbed wire bat that we've seen Mick use so many times before as Cactus Jack in his career. And he handed that over to Dean Ambrose as pretty much passing the torch. Now this week, Dean was visited by another hardcore legend in Terry Funk. Another pretty good backstage segment to where it ended with Terry Funk handed him over a little piece of the past, a chainsaw back from when Terry Funk was
known as Chainsaw Charlie, and he handed that over to Dean. What they're doing here is pretty much establishing Dean Ambrose as the next hardcore legend, dare I say it. I hate to throw the legend word around, but he's getting the seal of approval from two guys who are pretty much, that's what they're known for, Terry Funk and Mick Foley, and they are passing the torch over to Dean Ambrose, going into this street fight with Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania, and I think it's pretty surreal watching it. I mean, I'm a fan of that kind of wrestling. Really, I was a huge fan of Mankind, Mick Foley, Cactus Jack. You know, all three of his personalities. Big fan of Mick Foley, and just to see him kind of pass the torch over to Dean Ambrose and see Terry Funk do the same thing tonight, I think that's a big deal for Dean Ambrose, and I think it says a lot for this match. I mean, I'm expecting violence. I know it's the PG era, so I don't know how much they can get away with, but I think this is going to be probably the most anticipated match on the card come WrestleMania. That's the Brock Lesnar versus Dean Ambrose street fight.
Yeah, it's got to be something. No, I agree. Having the legends hand over things, like, it was really, really cool. And also, it goes along the lines of what Harry was saying, is that if you're going to use a legend, using them sparingly just is a seemingly more effective. We didn't have a long interview in the ring with Terry Funk. We didn't have a, you know, drawn-out promo by Mick Foley. We had them doing what they were there to do, and that's to make the current program seem more important. You know, so they really did. I mean, the chainsaw and him cutting the table was really crazy. I don't think he's going to bring the chainsaw to the match, but still, it was a nice little moment that longtime wrestling fans, both of Dean Ambrose and Terry Funk, would really like, I think. So it was just one of those rare occasions tonight where it actually went really well. It's a shame that Dean Ambrose's match did not go as well.
I want to say this, and I'm going to we'll touch on the main event match here shortly, because I think they did Dean Ambrose a complete disservice by putting him into the ring against Braun Strowman in the main event. But I want to touch on the segment real quick here. The only problem that I have is I have a problem with the viability of Ambrose using the chainsaw as a viable weapon. And if you wanted to look into Terry Funk's hardcore past, I think the branding iron would have been a better weapon for him to give Ambrose. But that's just too much into it.
I mean, that's possible. I think, you know, I think that I had the same thought as you. Like, well, you know, it's one thing to see Barbie. Like, yeah, we'll bring that out for sure. But we're not going to see Dean Ambrose fucking wailing a chainsaw around in the ring at WrestleMania.
Yeah, and I somehow don't imagine that the Weed Whacker is going to make its pay-per-view debut as a weapon either, a la the original CZW.
Right.
So, I feel like it would be a more viable situation if Terry Funk would have given Ambrose his branding iron, because I feel like the branding iron is a weapon that Ambrose could use in an actual fight, whereas the chainsaw just strikes me as something that's going to do nothing but run the risk of alienating viewers.
Right. But, if anything, it was a nice little nod to, I'd say, us.
And now, you wanted to talk about the match itself, so let's go ahead and get into that real quick before we go into our final Let's Talk About Raw here, Tony.
Okay. Wait, what? What was that?
Ambrose Strowman.
Oh, God.
okay.
Way to kill the momentum of the biggest babyface on your roster.
Yeah, not only that, it was just a crap match. Okay, so let me talk about Wyatt's promo mid-show with regards to the main event.
In a vacuum, that promo was pretty damn awesome. When you listen to it, you're like, oh, this is pretty cool. Like, that promo works. But then you realize who's saying it, and you're like, you've done this, like, 500 times. Like, and it doesn't ever lead to anything. So it's a really, really crappy moment when you do see good writing in terms of promos. It's surrounded by bad execution, And it just, I just wanted to highlight that for a minute because Bray Wyatt, that promo, if you were to read it, never mind hearing it, if you were to read it, you would be like, damn, that was good shit.
Rick, your thoughts on the match itself?
Do I have to?
That's what pretty much everybody was thinking as soon as the match was announced, honestly.
I guess I get it. Like, I think they were trying to showcase Dean Ambrose wrestling a guy who's way bigger, way stronger than him, just so we could kind of get a feel of what it's going to look like when he wrestles Brock. And honestly, my main problem with this match is probably the placement of it. This was not a good main event to have. I think we'd be a lot more lenient on it had this been like the 9 o'clock main event. You know, the put somewhere in the middle of the card. And I'm not usually a nitpicker like that says, oh, this should have been here in the card, this should have been there. But I know for the main event, it wasn't worth it. I mean, why not end the show with Roman attacking Triple H? That's the world championship. That's the world title program. That should be the thing closing the show, even though the fans aren't really getting into that as well. But it just fell flat. And to end the show like that was not a good – didn't give off good vibes.
Here's my thing. You want to know how you make this match better and you get fans more involved in it? It's Dean Ambrose and Luke Harper to end the show. It's instantly a better match. They have a history you can play off of, and they have a natural chemistry in the ring against each other.
Well, yeah, they could have done that, but they didn't. And instead we got crap. What Rick said is that they were trying to give us an example of what it would be like to face Brock. And I find that so annoyingly stupid only because Michael Cole specifically said that. And again, I've talked about this many times before. Don't tell me what I already know. Don't tell me what I'm supposed to get from this. You're supposed to encourage story. You're not supposed to be the obvious. You're not supposed to be Captain Obvious. You're not supposed to point out things that we're supposed to get on our own. Not only does it make me feel insulted as if you don't think that I'm aware of what you're doing, but it's also just really, really bad. It's just bad storytelling. It's bad TV shows. It's a lack of trust of your viewers. And if you continue to want to be an episodic television show, then you have to trust your viewers. Because if you don't, you end up insulting them, which is what I felt tonight. Of course that's what it was. It's wrestling 101, you know, give them a big opponent that's similar. But the thing is, Braun Strowman is not similar to Brock Lesnar at all, not even close. I mean, the closest thing that they have together is that both of their names start with BR. Really, there's nothing else to compare. I mean, Braun Strowman is so boring, and he was really bad. It was just, I feel like he's wearing boots with cement in them when he walks. It's just a bad match. And, you know, I won't go so far as to say Dean Ambrose lost momentum, because he's Dean Ambrose, and he'll get it back, and Heyman's there to help us, you know, through it all. But, man, if that wasn't the worst main event in a long time, I don't know what was. I mean, there was no reason for this match. There's legit no reason for it.
Here's the point that I raise in regards to Ambrose's momentum being here. How long has it been since you've seen Ambrose in a match where the crowd was chanting, this is boring?
That was so sad. And when the camera, which they never should have done, zoomed out to get a larger picture of the crowd, no one was interested. No one. Not even the front row. They were sitting down, hands hanging over the barricade, as if they were watching an empty ring waiting for people to come out. I was like, why would you do that? Why would you show that?
I want to say this, though. I'm glad you mentioned Paul Heyman. He was on commentary, and I love the way he gives so much credit to Ambrose. You know, he could just sit there and be the heel manager for Dean Ambrose's
larger-than-life opponent, and he could sit there and he could say, oh, Brock's going to destroy this pipsqueak, this Dean doesn't stand a chance, but he doesn't do that. He gives credit to where he should be given credit, and he's sitting there saying, you know, I know Dean Ambrose is going to go out, give it his all against Brock, and I know that Brock's going to be in the fight for his life come WrestleMania. You know, he's telling Michael Cole, you keep telling me stuff about Dean Ambrose like I'm denying his abilities. I'm not denying his abilities. I know who Dean Ambrose is, but Brock is just better. I mean, that's the way you promote somebody. That's the way you promote your opponents. That's the way you promote a match. You know, you don't just dog talk down against the person you're about to face. You got to build them up. And I love Paul Heyman for that.
Beautiful at that. I mean, he even said so much as, you know, no, I am worried about Dean Ambrose. I'm the only one worried about Dean Ambrose. Brock Lesnar is not worried about him. I am. He gives credit to every opponent that Brock may have. Like, it's just, it's really fucking cool to see because it's almost unheard of nowadays. And it's also hard to do. It's very difficult to get that concept over without sounding as if you're scripted or you're trying to belittle the person, even in complimenting them. So, yeah, Heyman is – I wish he was on commentary a bit more. I miss that.
I read Roddy Piper's autobiography, and he had a chapter in there – or not a chapter, but a little segment in there where he talks about the art of the promo and how, you know – so many guys just want to talk down on their opponents, but when you talk up your opponent and then you end up beating them, it makes you look even better. So, kudos.
Yeah.
The old line in regards to promos is if you make your opponent sound like he's a piece of shit, then basically what you do when you've beaten him is you've beaten a piece of shit, and if you lose to him, you've lost to a piece of shit. Whereas if you can build up your opponent as a credible threat, then if you defeat him, then you come off looking that much better for defeating a credible threat. And if you lose, then you look better for going up against that threat and putting in a valiant performance.
Yep.
Right.
Why two jackass, Tony?
This is something we kind of talked about in the beginning of the show, but not too long. We've got the penultimate chapter in the build to Jericho versus Styles, and it encompassed a great match with Kevin Owens and Styles, and a blast from the past with Jericho versus Fandango. I completely forgot about that guy, which is very sad. Styles gave a little tit for tat, distracted Jericho, but not enough to make him lose. And I asked you at the beginning of the show whether or not you were excited. I'm excited about it. I really am. I'm excited to see this match happen. I'm excited for Styles to be in the WWE. I think he's one of the first people to point at the sign, so that's cool. Who would have thought that Styles would be pointing at the WrestleMania sign? Really. I mean, I'm sure people have photoshopped that image for years, and now it's real. So it's kind of cool to see. But I don't know. I don't know. Could this have been built better? Could this have been changed or altered in some way that we were more excited about it? Or is this pretty much what we're going to get and what we knew we were going to get 4 weeks ago?
I think there's only so much more of this story that you can tell. And at this point, there's really not a whole lot further you can go with it. I'm curious to see... I'm curious to see what kind of stipulation they end up attaching to this match, but other than that, I think this story's pretty much told.
Yeah, he said that earlier about the stipulation, but then if they add a stipulation, they only have one more Raw to add it, and that doesn't give them a lot of time to react to the stipulation that's been added to their match. I don't know.
Tony, do you see a stipulation being added here?
Tonight I thought they were going to, but no, I think it's going to be a one-on-one, straight up, you know, you're better than me type of match.
I worry the fact that they've already had three singles matches before, two of them on television and then one of them on pay-per-view. I worry that that's going to kind of burn the crowd out as far as just a basic match between the two of them, and especially given the fact that it's probably going to be placed somewhere around the middle of the WrestleMania card itself.
Yeah, I don't know. WrestleMania as a whole seems somewhat underwhelming, and I know we're not going to talk about Raw next week, but I'm very anxious to see how they recover or if they're even interested in doing so, which I don't.
Well,
I don't think they are.
Well,
I wonder if he runs into another legend. Sorry, Harry.
I was just going to say, I was going to say that if you guys wanted to, what we could do is we could final reaction at the start of Raw about the episode of Raw and then go into the WrestleMania preview if you guys wanted to.
Yeah, I figured we were going to do that anyway.
Just so that way we're not completely ignoring the show at hand, but let's be honest, most people that are going to be listening to us next week are going to be listening for the WrestleMania preview.
Speaking of the final reaction, wait.
Before you segue us into the final reaction.
Actually, we're not going into the final reaction yet.
Okay.
I was going to take us into a couple quick hits first because there are a few things on Raw tonight that I'd like to discuss before we get into anything further.
Good.
Other stuff happened, huh?
Yeah.
The first thing that I'd like to say in regards to things that happened tonight here is, can we stop pretending this Andre Battle Royal is a big deal?
But it is now.
Yeah, this Monday, and then it'll be completely fucking ignored next Monday once again.
That was retarded.
Anything,
and of all people to
make kids. Anything that gets Bo Dallas on my TV screen is a big deal. He is the best thing. He is my favorite member of the Social Outcast. No one plays the lovable loser quite like Bo Dallas. I love Bo Dallas.
I will say that I must give credit. Curtis Axel cracked me up twice during the course of his promo. So shut the hell up, Rick. All right, let's move on and go to Charlotte and Natalya.
Natalya in that match? Because I thought that was
what?
Chris for a second there.
Yeah, hey,
you cut off
that.
In the middle of that.
I was bothered more at the fact that Becky and Sasha were bickering like two little girls. I'd never been so uninterested in what they were saying. I don't know what the point of that was. I get it. I get that they're coming up on a match. I get that. But it seems to have lost the meaning of what their match is supposed to be for, which is the title. I think Becky's really the only one that specified, like, the only bling I'm interested in is the title around Charlotte's waist. Other than that, they were just ridiculing each other, like, I don't like your hair, or you shop at the thrift store, or you wear cheap jewelry. When did we get there? When did we get to that point in this feud?
Well, I have Larry's review for Raw pulled up, and this is verbatim what he said in regards to your point there, and you're exactly right here. They made sure to have Becky and Sasha bicker on commentary, making them very unlikable, because apparently Kevin Dunn thinks all women's feuds are because bitches be crazy.
Oh, Larry, we don't always agree, but when we do, it's great.
He's exactly right here. The commentary there did more to turn me off towards the characters of Becky Lynch and Sasha Banks than the match did to endear me towards Charlotte. I actually really enjoyed Charlotte and Natalya at Roadblock. I thought it was a really well-put-together match. I could have done with a little bit more selling from Charlotte before going into the finish at Roadblock there, and we didn't have that issue here because this was more or less a Charlotte squash here tonight on Raw. But That being said, I do feel like you're doing an injustice to Natalya, putting her in this position here, getting Natalya ready for that 8 Diva tag that'll probably be on the pre-show. But you're also doing more damage to the characters of Becky and Sasha by having them on commentary bickering like schoolgirls.
Yeah.
All right, last one before we go into the final reaction. Bubba Ray Dudley versus R-Truth. It appears that Golden Truth is apparently going to be a thing here, and apparently it's going to be sacrificed in order to make the Usos look like gigantic baby faces, which the crowd then booed the hell out of.
Was that a boo in relation to Roman Reigns? Like, you're Roman's cousin. We hate you too.
I don't think so. And the reason I say that is because, as I was saying, I don't think so. And the reason I say that is because I think the Usos act is stale. And that was the fans letting them know. That was the fans letting them know that we. Go ahead, Tony.
Well, they're booing them because they're in Philadelphia and it's the Dudley Boys. So I fully expected that anyways. But it doesn't mean that you're wrong, Harry. The Usos have gotten completely stale. And it's like, we get that you're trying to, like, pop the crowd, but the tables thing, that's not yours. And that's, although that's kind of the point that the Dudleys were making, it's somewhat of a fair point. I don't think anybody wants to see that, at least not in Philadelphia. Don't do that, dude. That's a bad idea. Yeah.
All right, that's going to take us into our final reactions, Tony.
All right. We'll start with Rick, because I feel like starting with Rick.
All right.
What was your favorite part of the show?
That opening match, Owens versus AJ, that was, I dare I say that might be a match of the year candidate, man. That was a great match.
Yeah, I think it was good. Your least favorite part?
Just real quick, you put a better finish on that match, and it's a TV match of the year candidate. I 100% agree.
Yep. Worst part? So many to choose from. I'm going to give it to that main event match. I mean, when the crowd turns against you, starts chanting, this is boring, and that's how you're ending the show, I mean, that's not a good sign. That's got to be the lowest part of Raw. I mean, I was considering the whole Andre the Giant thing, but Bo Dallas pretty much saved that segment for me with his dance and his trying to shake the hand of Kane, so I'm not going to give it to that. But that main event, that was just bad.
Okay, your MVP of the show?
Kevin Owens, man. Like, not just because of his match with AJ, but it was the Kevin Owens show, like he said in his promo at the beginning of the show. I mean, he had that excellent match to start off, and then he came back down with those introductions that you had mentioned, which was great. And I love the fact that Sami Zayn's faux introduction, the introduction for Sin Cara, mentioned that this guy wrestled under a mask for a lot of his career. If Sin Cara comes out, it was great. Kevin Owens, he did a good job tonight. And his interactions with Stephanie, too. Don't forget that. Those are pretty good, too.
Yeah. What would you rate the show tonight?
Give it a... I'm going to be nice and give it a 5. I don't want to give it below average. I'll just give it a 5. 5 out of 10.
All right. Harry? Hi.
Hit me, Tony.
How are you?
I'm okay. I'm feeling a little bit better. I finally got the nauseous feeling to go away.
Well, that's good. All right. Well, let's talk about Raw. What would you say your favorite part of the show was?
Owens and Styles.
All right. And your least favorite part?
I am actually going to pick that Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal segment here, and the only reason I'm going to pick that is more specifically for Big Show's promo rather than anything with the social outcasts. You can't add a match to the show 14 days before the show and then expect me to treat it as a big deal. Done literally jack shit with the two previous winners.
Very good point. Oh, yeah. Who's the MVP of the show?
Much like Rick, I'm going to give the MVP tonight to Kevin Owens.
And your rating?
I will give this show a flunking grade. I gave it a 4.
Okay.
Hey, Tony.
What's up?
Favorite match or moment?
I'm going to definitely go with the main or with the opening match, which I consider the main event of the show. Yeah. Awesome from top to bottom. I mean, it was beautiful. We're not going to disagree a lot this time, guys.
Your least favorite match or moment?
The main event. It drained me more than I was already drained. I mean, I was watching a Raw that just kept going deeper and deeper into the hole, and then they gave me that at the end, and I was just like, fuck.
Yeah, I could definitely see your willpower fading as you were typing up the report as I tried to catch up on what little bit that I missed while I was dealing with my nausea issues during the show.
Right.
Your show MVP.
Again, we're going to agree. Kevin Owens definitely stole the show tonight. Everything he did was right. Everything. Didn't, you know, lead to what we wanted it to per se, but everything that he did on the show was amazing.
And your overall show rating?
3 out of 10.
So my 4 is the average for the three of us. Not exactly what you'd expect for the Raw episode of Raw 13 days before WrestleMania, huh, Tony?
No, not at all. I didn't expect it at all. I expected some type of recon, something to just be better. But no, I did not expect what we got here.
They've got 13 days to make this work still. And I will say to their credit, SmackDown actually has been pretty good the last couple of weeks. I know you don't watch SmackDown unless you're recapping it, filling in for Larry, but SmackDown has been pretty good the last couple of weeks. I do believe that's going to do it for us, Tony.
Yep. So that's it. Next week we're going to have our big show. Like Harry said, we'll have a review of Raw to start it off, and then we'll talk about WrestleMania for pretty much the rest of the show. We're expecting a lot of calls, so make sure you call in early. Otherwise, I'll ignore you.
Allow me to make one last impassioned plea for this year. Guys, this show's just as much about you as it is about us. And we don't want to be the only ones giving our predictions for Mania. We want to hear from all of you. I know Jason's going to call in. The four of us will be here. John and JD have already said they'll be here. We're hoping to get a couple of our previous callers back in, guys like Robert Foster from Yes, Blake Moody, Cody
Rich
from... Rick's friend from Louisiana. A little surprised your friend Jason didn't call in, Rick. A little surprised your friend Jason didn't call in, Rick.
I know. Me too. They're not my friends. Stop using that word. I hate those guys. I hate all of them.
Yeah, fuck you, you rat bastards. All right, anyways. So, seriously, this Mania show is just as much about you guys as it is about us. I want to have as many people on here to get predictions for Mania as I possibly can. And
all right.
I want to have just as many people back for the Raw after Mania, because you know there's going to be a lot to talk about for that show. It's always easily the best Raw of the year.
Oh, of course.
Take it home, Tony.
All right, guys. Thanks for joining us. I only have 2 words for everyone. Deuces, bitches.
For Rick Balin, Tony Acero, I'm Harry Broadhurst. You've been listening to the Raw Reaction here on DeMarco Wrestling Radio. We thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Again, make sure you call in. We want predictions. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great night.
Is this the final scene in our tragic play? Only curtains remain to fall. There's no reason left to stay in this play. We move backwards against the wall. Conversation's over.
Plan 3 Still Broken takes us home. I'm Harry Broadhurst. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will talk to you next Monday night as myself, Tony Asell, Rick Balin, Jimmy Christopher bring you the WrestleMania preview edition, the second such of the Raw Reaction. We thank you for listening. We hope you join us for the preview. And, guys, I'm serious. Call in. We want your opinions. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next Monday night here on DeMarco Wrestling Radio.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.